Time now for Fitzy and Mego with Nick Fitzy Stevens and Megan Ottolini on WEEI.
Like to watch? Just follow WEEI on Twitch.
Cortez delivers. Freeman hits the ball to right field. She is gone! Gibby! Meet Freddy! Game one of the World Series!
The Yankees lose.
Oh, even though your team wasn't in the Fall Classic, and they have a long way to go just to get back to the postseason. I got to tell you, as a sports fan in general, baseball fan, Sox fan, that Friday night, that World Series Game 1 was just positively delightful. Mego, nothing Boston fans love more than a little bit of schadenfreude to end the week and begin the weekend, and I have no idea why Boone walked Mookie Betts so he could set up Cortez on Freddie Freeman. I mean, I don't think Mookie Betts has a signature grand slam in the World Series or home run in that particular case. I see what he was trying to do, but spoiler alert, it didn't work. And didn't it just deliver us a warm slice of Yankee hater joy on a Friday night?
Can we hear the call from Poppy again? I just love that. It just warms
me. Yankees lose.
I don't know why it gets me so good.
Oh, it makes me. And by the way, I think that I did watch a highlight this morning on Twitter. Somebody married the audio of Vin Scully's great call of the Kirk Gibson game-ending World Series home run from 1988 to Freddie Freeman's video from last night, and it almost synced up perfectly. Like, it's amazing. And I didn't even realize Joe Davis does Yankees games as well. Dodgers games. That guy is one busy dude. He is the number two voice for Fox's NFL coverage. He has replaced Joe Buck since he went to ESPN as the voice of MLB on Fox, and does Yankees games. Dodgers games.
It's okay. They're the same. Yeah, it's just like, honestly, in this century, they're the same. It's when I think about this World Series, I kind of think about the March Madness game. It was probably like 7 years ago at this point. Do you remember when it was Duke versus Yale? And it was like, I hope for once one of these kids will get a shot. that's how it feels. It's like, it's two extremely high spending teams. Probably good for MLB for the ratings. That's fine. But there's not a lot to love for Boston fans in this World Series.
No, there isn't necessarily, because if you see the Dodgers win, you're happy for Dave Roberts, though I think was far better the base stealer than he is a baseball manager. But you see Mookie Betts and Kike and some other Red Sox elements succeeding. So I guess you're pulling for the Dodgers.
Are we pulling for Kike? I'm not really pulling for
Probably
PK.
Not. Maybe it's Mookie. Just, maybe Mookie more.
Well, sure on the PK. Other side, you got the bitter rival. You got Alex Verdugo.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, you got two respective, well-funded evil empires, if you want to go down that road, between the Dodgers and the Yankees. But I'm sure if we were to just pop into five corner taverns today, Mego, we could probably ask, are you rooting for the Dodgers or the Yankees? And they're going to say, I'm rooting for the Dodgers because they're playing the Yankees. That's why. Like, I used to wear that T-shirt that said I have two favorite teams in baseball, the Red Sox and whoever's playing the Yankees.
Why don't you have that T-shirt anymore? You say you used to have it.
I haven't worn it in the longest time. See,
because the rivalry is not alive.
Because the complacency set in, multiple World Series and all the glory and duck boat parades in Boston brought about some complacency, and or the fact that everybody became best buddies and the rivalry's gone.
That's true. That's it. We'll get to the comeback later in the show, because I watched the entire comeback series in one evening. Wasn't really my choice to program it that way, but my husband wanted to watch the entire thing, so we didn't move from the couch and watched it. And it sparked a debate in my home that I took to the internet, because I was hoping that people would side with me, and they didn't. And so we'll get to that later.
Yes, we will. And good morning, everybody. A very pleasant, crisp autumn Saturday morning here in New England. It is the Ken and Curtis Show, but it has been supplanted today by the Fitzy and Mego experience.
It's much better looking today. We're not on Twitch, but it's a better looking show than usual. I think we can say that.
It is a handsome, delightful, upbeat, and positive Saturday morning experience. It has great hair.
It's got a we have that going for us. We have a lot of hair.
At least we have hair going for us today. Yes, Curtis has a well-deserved day off. Ken is away on family business. So Fitzy and Mego got you today from 9 until 12. And you can join the party at any moment if you just give us a ringle jingle at 617-779-7937. That's your telephone number. You will be greeted, of course, by the fabulous Joe Braverman on the other end today producing the program. Good morning, Joe.
Morning, Fitzy. Morning, Mego. You guys are right. I would say, you know, no disrespect to Ken and Curtis, but once you mention Tom Brady, it'll be the furthest the show has gone without mentioning him.
Yeah, we are not going to try to tie any of our woes, malaises, or issues back to Tom Brady. As much as I miss him and opine for the glory days of Brady and Belichick, they are long gone in our rear view. We've got so much to talk about right now, including Foxborough under fire, the week that was, an exhausting, grueling week that it was in Patriots coverage and Patriots conversation.
And
not
drama.
To mention, yeah, we got drama on the field. We have drama in the front office. We have drama in the locker room. Now we've got drama on the beat as well.
Drama on the drama.
Let me tell you something. There's always drama on the beat. There's you know it, Fitzy. There's always a little drama on the beat. Oh, did you see so-and-so's story? Oh, that's so far-fetched. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, I think I know who that person's talking to. Beat writers are so gossipy. That's why they're beat writers. They want to get the story, and they all just chatter, chatter, chatter. I love it. Because typically I'm on the outside, so I like to watch the boys squabble, and they were squabbling this week. There's a lot of outward squabbling.
There's a whole lot of squabbling going on right now.
I don't know if other people love this as much as I do. I just find it so entertaining when grown men writing about football get extremely upset with each other.
Doesn't it feel a touch petty?
Oh, it's totally petty, and I love it. I love it. I get it, though. Like, people take a lot of pride in what they do. I mean, I don't professionally, but other people who work better than I do take a lot of pride in what they do. And so, you know, they take it personally when somebody criticizes them, and there was criticism going around.
Wait a second. Did you just say that you don't take pride in what you do?
No, I take shame in it.
What?
I leave a lot of what I do with like shame in my heart. I walk away and I'm like, oh God, what happened here? How did we get here?
How did we get here is probably a great new name for a segment. Maybe that's what we should, when Hart and I would do the Saturday shows, the Sunday shows, we would often start the program off with a little bit called Who Won the Week.
Ooh.
So we would just sort of, you know, gauge who had the best week. It could be a particular coach, a player, a team, whatever.
It's so
in
positive.
Boston sports, but whatever in Boston sports moved the needle in the right direction. You and I could go with how did we get here?
How did we get here?
Because that seems rather befitting for us. But why don't we let's do a quick temperature check on everyone in Boston sports right now. The Bruins kind of struggling right now. Things are not going great in the wide world of the black and gold. The Red Sox have not played active baseball for quite some time,
which they are now watching. Which feels like a win.
Yeah. It in a lot of ways.
But it's also a loss because of the two teams who are playing for the championship.
But it's at least you're looking around and it's like, well, you didn't do anything to really embarrass yourselves this week.
And there's positive Red Sox talk going around Red Sox Nation and the greater Boston / New England area because of the comeback documentary, which is just absolutely tremendous. And I think a lot of people planned on parsing it out over three nights or two nights because it's 3 1-hour plus episodes.
Not in my house.
Nope. I think a lot of people got sucked in to the Mego and husband experience because it's just imminently bingeable.
Fitzy, it's like, what is new here? We've seen all of this before. It's like, no, I just want to watch Theo tell it again. I just want to watch Theo go through the A-Rod experience again. It's like, there is nothing new in that documentary.
Mm-mm.
But it's like, it's just like, nope, I just want to experience it again. Okay, fine, sure. It's like a purely just like a pleasure experience. You're not going to walk away from it being like, oh, well, I didn't know that. That's incredibly insightful. That's something different. It's like, nope, just relive it.
I think I could just listen to Theo from his gorgeous home. Looks like he's just got the most expensive house in Wellesley or something, just with the beautiful backyard, the well-windowed panorama.
I feel like Theo gives a little Winchester vibe to me.
Oh, is that a Winchester vibe?
I don't know. I have no idea where he lives, but I would guess like Winchester, maybe Newton. Wellesley is a little bit too like Celtics-y for him.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's well-adorned Metro West, put it that way. I could listen to Theo all day. I could also just watch Chubby Pedro recount stories and talk about headhunting and protecting his batters.
That was fun.
It's great. It's so great. It is just imminently bingeable. And like you said, even though you're not covering any new ground, it's not like they've surfaced things that like, oh, this puts the entire rivalry in the 86 years in a whole new context for me. No, they're just going back over what you loved. But I think one of the things that I think people have started to come to realize is that it's okay to go back and recover some of these championships and these epic runs and what went into the ultimate duck boat parades and the overcoming the Yankees and the Patriots winning so many Super Bowls, because there was so much greatness at once. Most cities would just kill for a championship amongst all four major sports every 10 years or so. And we had 13 over the course of just over 20 years. And there was such a rush from 01 to 08 that going back and just really taking a long look at what went into these championships and these epic successes of the teams, I think it's called for. I think this is well warranted coverage and docu-joy, if you will.
Yeah, and you have the big anniversary, so it's the timing makes sense. It's not like it's just some random thing that they decided to put out there. Did you think it was weird that there was the very little Manny of it all?
Yeah, I'm surprised.
Because they got a lot of guys, and the stuff that they did, I don't really think this is like a spoiler because it's real life. The stuff that they did in the third episode with Wake was very moving, just really, really nice, like, center on him, especially with the way things went in 03, and then kind of revisiting it and talking about him and his passing. Like, I thought that was really, really nicely done and very respectful. But they got like pretty much everybody else had a little talking head bit.
And it's amazing. I love seeing
Schilling.
Mike Timlin.
Like, they talked to
Schilling. Was great.
So what was it? Did Manny just not want to comply?
Manny reportedly declined.
Okay.
He declined to speak along with Nomar.
That's odd. Now,
Nomar still kind of hurt over the whole thing. I can see why that would be a sore spot, or at least like not wanting to go over why things melted down for him and why it didn't work out and why the Red Sox ultimately had to move on from such a tent pole. Like, Nomar was a meme. He was a vibe. He was a hero. He was an icon. And then it all just went south so quickly for him. It stinks that Manny didn't want to do it. I can sort of understand why Nomar wouldn't want to do it. I was thrilled to just hear from Trot Nixon and Mike Timlin all over again. And it would have been a shame if they did not include Schilling. I'm glad they included him. He belongs in there most certainly because of what a pivotal part he played. However you may feel about his views or whatnot, like,
Theo,
the man has gone through a lot.
Theo
and deserved
was,
to be
was
there.
Throwing some shade at Schilling that was really funny. Or he was like, of course, like, you know, we appealed to something along the lines of like, we told Schilling this and it really appealed to his ego. it's like, well, he wanted to be a part of that because, they kind of like sold him on breaking the curse and they were like, that appealed to his ego. So that was very Schilling. And you're like, oh my God.
It was honest, at least.
And then you hear these things 20 years later, and it's like, yeah, that checks out.
Yeah, that tracks. Yeah, that tracks. As far as the other sports go, you know what's going on with the Patriots, and we're going to jump into that on the other side of trending sports news in a commercial break. And as far as your Celtics, what a great way to start the season. They tipped off. They raised banner 18. Would have been kind of nice maybe if they could have at least, you know, steamed or ironed the banner before they hung it up in the rafters, or TNT had not cut to commercial break. But great start for the Celtics season. Awesome coverage, great vibes, and the team looks awesome right out of the gate. Mego, so who would you say won the week overall? Who had the best week in Boston sports between players, coaches, or teams overall?
It has to be the Celtics. I think that if you're getting really disgruntled with the Patriots experience and you're also starting to feel a little bit despondent about the way that the Bruins are starting, just watch the Celtics. Because I think that the Celtics, barring any like uncontrollable disaster, which would be injury or something else that I don't even want to get into because I just don't want to imagine what could go wrong. I really do feel like this is the best chance that an NBA team is going to have at a repeat, a championship repeat, since those Warriors teams. This team is that good. The roster is that stacked. They're not going to be greatly hurt in the first half of the regular season by missing Kristaps Porzingis. He's probably not going to come back until at least December. And even then, he's going to be on a serious minutes restriction because you want him healthy for the playoffs. Like, this team's just going to roll. They're absolutely going to roll. I could see this team winning 70 games this year. I think that's how good they are. And it's just fun to watch them night to night, in my opinion.
Yeah, and the notion that somehow a team that probably had achieved its particular goal and finally overcome the hurdle of winning a championship, realizing their potential, not just being Eastern Conference final participants or even making their way to the finals, somehow seems even more focused and more motivated than ever. I think in a lot of ways we can probably thank Grant Hill, Steve Kerr, and everyone else associated with the Olympics for what they did over the summer, because these guys seem hell-bent and on a mission. Although Joe Mazzulla wants to remind us that nothing really matters and that we're all going to be dead at some point. That's true. We know in their heart they have another point to prove. And I, for one, agree with you and can't wait to go for the ride. 617-779-7937 is your telephone number. When we come back, we'll get into the mess in Foxborough. What a week. Thoroughly exhausting. And yet still here we are trying to sift through the mess and make some sense of it all. Can they actually turn things around tomorrow? Will they get a win on the board against an equally dysfunctional franchise that Devonta Adams says doesn't have a lot of joy in its heart right now? Or are the Patriots just, as Mego put it, too immature? We'll get to that. Your calls and so much more. But first, let's catch you up on everything trending in sports with Joe Braverman.
If you're in the Patriots locker room and your head coach calls you soft, you say what?
Well, it's frustrating. It's frustrating to hear that, because if it's Bill Belichick, if it's an acclaimed head coach, and not that Gerard Mayo didn't have an accomplished career, but you are a rookie head coach. You don't get to say nothing at this point until you earn the right to say things. You earn the right by winning, by scheming, and showing your scheme is effective. We don't even know if your identity and culture is effective. So calling players soft before you establish identity, before you establish a scheme. Like, that's why Bill Belichick came out and was like, these are the same guys we had last year, and we stopped the run pretty fine. And now you got the same guys, and you're not getting it done at a high level. That says more about you than the players. And then saying the players are soft lacks accountability. That lacks personal accountability. You have a part in this. You have a part in them not stopping a run. And by just putting the blame on you, you lose respect to players.
Former Seattle Seahawks, San Francisco 49er, and known Patriots critic at times. That's Richard Sherman from Amazon Prime's Thursday Night Football postgame show, talking about Gerard Mayo and the Patriots experience. He was one of many, many in the media this week that was vocal, not just as to the Patriots' woes, but to the choice of words that Coach Gerard Mayo had, of course, now infamously following the Patriots' 32-16 defeat across the pond last Sunday against the Jaguars, where, as you guys know, we'll reset the table so everyone understands, that Gerard Mayo called the Patriots soft. He said they were a soft football team. And then as Gerard Mayo often does on Walk It Back Monday, which other people call Patriots Monday here on WEEI, he said they're not a soft football team. He qualified it as a team that is playing softly. And that got a rise out of a lot of people in the media. Mego, as I was putting together, this is Fitzy and Mego filling in for Ken and Curtis on a lovely, crisp Saturday morning. Happy to have you at 617-779-7937. I was putting together the Sunday 7 piece every week for WEI.com, and there were a lot of people in the media this week that were very unhappy with Mayo's choice of words, or at least the idea that he went about business the way that he did, and seemed to. It's kind of a desperation move on his behalf, and it seemed as though he was a little unprepared for all the blowback that he would get from it. You had JJ Watt
team across the board.
You think calling them soft was a desperation move by him?
It felt a little. I mean, it felt honest. At least I appreciate the fact that he was being honest in his assessment, if you will. But it did feel like a little bit of a desperation heave on his behalf. In that, like, you have to know, like, he's been in the media long enough. He's played football. He knows Boston. He should have known what was going to happen, and that he was going to get all that blowback, you know, internally as well as from people like Richard Sherman, his former employer, mentor, or rather his former coach, and Bill Belichick, which we'll get to in a minute. J.J. Watt jumped on the Pat McAfee show. He was not happy about it as well, saying something to the tune of, I don't know a lot of locker rooms that are going to suddenly start playing tough football because their coach called them soft in the media. That's not going to get a that's not going to go over very well. What did you think when you first heard that from him last Sunday?
Well, I don't think he was wrong. It's nope. Pretty much the same kind of evaluation that anybody would take away when a team gets run on 17 play straight. Like, that's tough. So I would agree with the assessment that they looked soft, but what is that a reflection of? Is it a reflection of a lack of execution by the players on the field, or is it a reflection of the culture that is set by the head coach?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, a culture has to be carried out by the senior guys in the locker room, your captains who are like dropping like flies very early in the season. So I think that when Gerard Mayo said that, my first reaction was, he's not wrong, but also that's coming back on you. It's a tough thing to say to your locker room through the media, as much as he then throughout this entire week has said, I always communicate to the team through the media, and kind of saying, I'm never going to say anything to the media that I wouldn't say to the locker room's face, or that I haven't already said to the locker room's face. So nothing up here is going to be a surprise. I don't know that that's consistently true. There was a time earlier in the season when he said that Ramondre Stevenson was in danger of being benched to start a game for Antonio Gibson. And he said that before telling Ramondre in the locker room. Like, we went and talked to Ramondre right after that press conference. And Ramondre said, we haven't had that conversation yet, but it's not a surprise. This is when he was having the fumbling issues. So I don't even know that that's very true. I think that this team would have to look at themselves in the mirror and say, yeah, they are playing soft. I think people in the media are almost making this a bigger deal, like the whole soft aspect of it, because it's honest.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that Gerard Mayo should have stood by it. He should have pulled, honestly, like, and this is a weird way to say this, but pull an Ime Udoka, like at the beginning of that Celtics season when Ime, not in other ways off the court, Ime Udoka at the beginning of that Celtics season said, you know, like, these guys are... He was highly critical of that Celtics team, and he was a hard ass. And the whole thing is like, okay, so
a flop a little more.
So like, they're the whole thing with the Gerard Mayo experience is like, oh, it's not going to be a hard ass vibe. It's going to be, you know, like a leader of men, but in this new way with a younger player and everything. And I'm just like, can we just like abandon that? I think Gerard Mayo is more comfortable being kind of a hard ass. So be that guy and put it out there. We talked about this Monday night, Fitzy.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to call the team soft, don't put a qualifier in it. Don't say like, oh, no, they're actually playing soft. No, they looked soft on Sunday. So say like, yeah, I stand by it. We can't have that level of performance. And those guys know that because I tell them that in the locker room every day. And the message needs to get through.
Yes, whether it is a health issue, because, of course, as we discussed on Monday, and I've been wanting to highlight time and time again, I think some of the criticism of the Patriots is unfair in that when you lose your best defensive tackle, your best linebacker, and your best safety, and I know injuries happen in football, I get it. It's a contact sport, it's a violent sport, it's a brutal sport, and you have to be prepared for these things because even if the forecast calls for bright sunshine, it's usually going to rain in football. And so when you lose these guys, you have to be prepared with depth, and that falls on Mayo and Groh and Wolf and everybody up in ownership to make sure that they have the funds, the players, and what they need, the assets available to them. But when you lose, like, the core of your defense, it's kind of hard for your defense to sort of just to play at the level that you're used to. Now, that being said, Mayo's comments were echoed by a lot of players in the locker room. I didn't hear a lot of guys come out and say, coach is wrong, we're not soft, this sucks, I'm mad that he called us. Like, to a man, it's almost like they all agreed that they're not playing the right way. And then you had players like Kendrick Bourne and Jonathan Jones, who I know you spoke to, we'll get to their audio in just a second. You had other guys coming out and saying, we've got people making business decisions, we've got people freelancing, we've got maturity issues, we've got guys that are staying out late, eating whatever, as Kendrick Bourne remind us. Like, weird stuff. Very you know, there have been a lot of things that have happened in the last couple of years that people in the media have called unpatriot-like. Sadly, it's starting to become more patriot-like or more the norm that there's dysfunction, that there's disagreement, and the team is not playing harmoniously. But to hear that people are just kind of like already off the rails and not committing, that they're, you know, years ago, if people did something like this, like I remember Jamie Collins was in a contract year in one game against Buffalo. He quote unquote freelanced. Next thing you know, oh, see you later. Traded to Cleveland.
Off to the worst team in football.
Off to the worst. Yeah. Sent to the phantom zone of football at the time as well. Now I think it's time for Jerod Mayo. I think he can be a little bit of both. I think he has some hard ass vibes about him because he's a football player and he played middle linebacker. So he likes the contact sport. He likes the rough and tumble of it. But at the same time, he is super affable. He is a bit of a front man. He can be kind of corporate as well. And he learns to move on from things. Somebody told him after his introductory press conference to ditch the whole young Thundercat routine because somebody took a quick Q rating on that and was like, coach. Yeah, not a single person like that you said that. So if we can just move on from that, that'd be great.
I kind of would rather him, if he's going to try to be this like new generation of a coach a la Mike McDaniel or somebody like that, then you have to be authentic and you have to roll with what you say. You have to commit to who you are and your message and just stick with it. And we talked about this again earlier in the week, Fitzy, but the pleasing everybody all the time is impossible. And so I think the only way that you can and the only way that you can kind of have a North Star, which is what the team is really lacking right now, is to be authentically yourself and know that you're going to piss people off from time to time. I don't know who's in his ear down there in Foxborough, whether it's about how he's talking during press conferences or how he's running the team. But it's just so scattershot. It's so disorganized, and the football is reflected that way on the field. But even just day to day, it's like, okay, now we're a team that's about this. Now we're a team that's about that. What I said, I actually didn't mean it that way. I shouldn't have said it that way. At some point, I just kind of want to say, like, well, who cares how you said it? Just commit to it.
Just
and
own
move
it.
On. Own it. Absolutely. Own it and say, yeah, the team looked soft Sunday. Didn't you think so? How would you qualify it? What was your column? You know, throw it back. If you're on the radio, I don't know. I thought it looked soft. What do you guys think? You like this 1-6 team? Because I'm pissed off about it. And I know all the guys in that locker room are pissed off, too. Go talk to Kyle Duggar. He's mad. You know, talk to anybody. They know it's not up to snuff. And so what? It's like so inflammatory that I come out and say that. Who cares what people are saying on Thursday Night Football or ESPN or any of these national or even what we're saying over here on EEI or writing? Like, it's about what's in your locker room. And if you keep dancing around the message and taking two steps back every time, it just feels like who knows what the culture is down there.
Yeah, the whole thing was establishing a new culture, seeming to be people first, player first. You know, the Wolves famous, like you said, like you mentioned, fewer hard ass vibes around there. It's going to be collaborative, silo free. You know, we got a caller, Dan in Rhode Island, who calls him the Silo King. I can't imagine that Mayo would love that nickname as well. But like, as they keep telling us, like, it's all about a new culture. I have no idea what the culture is because you don't have any stars. So it's not based around a particular star, although there is one in bloom right now. And we'll get to how the world is fawning over Drake May, and rightly so. Coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. But I don't know what the identity of this team is. Like, I still think people look and see the Flying Elvis. They see the Patriots font and they think of the glory days. It is so far removed from that. It's almost like they should go with a whole new, like they should revamp everything because it's a completely different football team now. And your identity in a lot of ways will be forged by your energy, your effort, your output, and ultimately the results. And right now the results stink. And the team is not playing well, whether they're injured or not, whether they should have signed this player or drafted that player. It's a mess. And to have wide receivers clamoring for the ball, people sharing too much in social media, people whining in the press, and then the press suddenly turns on itself as well. Like,
they shouldn't even be looking at what the press is doing to itself because that's a whole sideshow, which again, I love, but we'll get to.
It's a good self-reflection. Is that what we've become?
Fitzy, like, it's just, it's a combination of pretty much the entire coaching staff learning on the job and within that locker room, a loss of leadership. And I say that knowing that there's guys in there like Hunter Henry, like John Jones, like Dietrich Wise, who are really, really strong character guys. And they're the lead by example type of guys. And they say the right stuff and they do go about their business the right way. But there's not a Matthew Slater in there. There's not a Devin McCourty in there. There's not somebody, there's certainly not a Tom Brady in terms of, I'm the guy who's kind of hard ass. And I've been here before, and so you look at me, and you're kind of scared to F up. Maybe you think twice about what you're posting on social media, because you know I'm going to turn to you in the locker room and go, what the hell is that about? That was not a professional move. I don't think that they have that personality in the locker room or somebody with that kind of cachet. And you really need that in order to establish and carry out the culture day to day, especially when your coaches are learning on the job. I think that that's a real problem for them. And look, I don't know if it's tough to look at who the captains were at the beginning of the year. That was probably a little bit Juwan Bentley. That was certainly David Andrews. Those guys are both injured. I honestly think some of that hard ass vibe was Jabril Peppers. And he can't be in that locker room.
He most certainly no. He was the number. He was the number two safety last year in terms of run support.
Like, yeah, and
he's
and,
he is a badass, and he's a reflection of the kind of football Bill Belichick wanted, and that Mayo was going to count
and,
on.
And that's just where the situation is in the locker room when you're having these meetings in the middle of the week, like they did, and they're having these come to Jesus moments about who they want to be. I don't know who the voice is in that room. And so you're kind of left looking at each other and going, I mean, do we want like our rookie quarterback to stand up and say something? Because he's really not got the experience. He's a young guy who's leading, again, leading by example and doing his best. But I'm not sure that he's even in a position in this locker room where he can stand up and say like, hey, what the hell were we doing on Sunday, guys? You know, like we're better than this. Maybe we can. Maybe we're not talented, more talented than the other team, but we can certainly show up better than we showed up.
We have some calls I want to get to in just a second, but I want to, since we have to take a commercial break momentarily, I just sort of want to ask aloud. You highlight the fact that a lot of these coordinators now, people say like, oh, Jerod Mayo, he was part of the defense the last couple of years. He played defense, so defense will be a strong suit. That's why everyone was hype on the defense. DeMarcus Covington. He was the defensive line coach. He's a hotshot coordinator in waiting. Now he's actually the defensive coordinator. People were interested in interviewing him as well. He worked the Senior Bowl. He was part of that defense for a while. He's going to be awesome. Alex Van Pelt, he played the position. He's been around offenses for years. He's going to be great. Blah, 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 blah. Springer, you know, he's a high-energy guy. He's part of the Rams. Hey, even if he was only assistant coaching special teams, he was near Sean McVay. Maybe he'll bring some of that DNA over with him. I almost sort of feel like, in a lot of ways, maybe ownership did Mayo a bit of a disservice by helping put together a coaching and, you know, Elliot, what role Elliot Wolf had in all this as well. Even though we know he's got football literally in his DNA, he's never run as large an operation as he has now as the executive VP of player personnel. Should they have given him more experienced people to help him, you know, push the ship away from dry dock and out into open water? You know, because having so many people learning together, maybe this is actually what you get.
I think there's just it's just one challenge among many that was thrown with this season. So on the one hand, I think that they really wanted other coordinators, but is particularly with the offensive coordinator, even when you hear about who they reportedly were throwing a lot of money at, Nick Haley. Okay, Nick Haley's like a great coach in development and you'd love to bring him back to Foxborough, but it's not like he's Cliff Kingsbury or somebody who has like all this other experience.
No,
you know,
he's not Shanahan.
He's a young guy in development. And so I'm not sure that they ever had a plan that didn't look like it was developmental. And to me, that's frustrating because I think it puts Jerod Mayo in a tough position where he's a developmental guy and literally everyone around him is. So if you're asking me if they should have had more experienced coordinators, yes, absolutely. Was it realistic for them to woo those guys to come to Foxborough with the roster that they had? No, I don't think anybody wanted to come here in the offseason, whether it was players or coaches. And that's the position that you're in as a team that is starting their second rebuild in 5 years. That's not a desirable place.
and second rebuild.
It is. That's what it. That's what it is. It's a new rebuild, and this one's tougher than the last one because you're working with even less. And so the only way to get yourself out of this is to wait on this development. Maybe spend a little bit more money next season and hope that Drake May looks like enough that you can actually just build completely around him. Because otherwise, I don't really see anything that is attractive with the situation where you're going to be bringing in high-end actual winning talent, be it on the roster or on the coaching staff. People will bitch and bitch and bitch about the money. And yeah, like the money can be a problem. But you try to get Calvin Ridley. You try to get Brandon Ayuk. Guys don't want to come here.
No, they don't. And until they see a culture established, until they see that there's a chance to win, until they see there's a chance to enjoy their football experience, why would anyone want to come here unless they get double what they're offered anywhere else? And yes, I know the Patriots are going to have over $130 million in available salary cap to spend next offseason, and they're going to have a lot of draft picks, and maybe they'll even end up with more, and we'll get to who they may trade and if they should even make any trades before the November 5th trade deadline. You have basically the rest of the season to me is about, well, we'll get to what it's all about when we come back in just a second. Ed, Rich, Ron, I see your calls lined up at 617-779-7937. We'll get to you. We'll get to what the rest of the season is about and some of these maturity issues the Patriots need to overcome to not only figure out how they can be a more attractive destination for next year, but to also just start establishing a culture now, because winning begets losing and losing begets losing. You're listening to Fitzy and Mego here on a Saturday morning on WEEI.
Maybe part of the problem is that there's young guys that don't quite know the standard that has to be attained and achieved on a regular basis.
I think you could say that. I think just guys just not understanding. As I always said, either you don't know, you know, how to do it, or you're not willing to do it. I don't think guys aren't willing to. Guys show up, they give effort. And I think it's just more buying in and learning what it looks like to be a successful team, to be a successful player in this league.
Jonathan Jones, Patriots cornerback, kind of a swing cornerback, if you will, and now de facto leader of the locker room in absence of the Patriots captains, who Mego, in a strange twist, it's almost turned into like a Final Destination movie. Every time they put a C on someone's chest, down goes another captain. Now I understand why Bill Belichick never wanted to put those C's on the chest in the first place, because it's become an absolute, absolute curse for them as well. But I heard that audio that you got in the locker room this week from Jonathan Jones, who did a great job. And I read some stuff that he also offered to Andrew Callahan in a nice little piece on BostonHerald.com as well. The funny thing is, the identity of the Patriots is that they are identity free, and they do lack leadership, and they do lack a certain level of maturity. And I think this is one of the things that is damning them these days. And you wrote as much earlier this week on WEEI.com. It's almost like, you know what it is? I want an adult to walk into the room and tell everyone, from the wide receivers to the coaches to the media and everything, just everybody shut up for a second and just let us figure out, with who we have right now, how to play football again, how to enjoy playing football, and heavens forbid, actually start winning football.
Yeah, I don't know what you do, though. Like, I don't know who that person is. I think the issue is that it hasn't happened organically for this team, and it's been very much the opposite because of the injuries, because of how the roster was constructed. Even trading somebody like Matthew Judon, which was kind of like a self-inflicted wound that it felt like at the time was the right move to make, because he wasn't going to be part of this rebuild for several years, and he was getting disgruntled. But at the same time, there's just a standard that slowly erodes. I'm not even talking about over the last 5 years. I'm talking about over the last 5 weeks. Their standard is just eroding there. And then you have younger guys who have not been in a winning program before, particularly in the receiver room, who are looking around going, well, if this isn't going to work out with this team, I at least want myself to look good on tape. I at least want to have myself at the beginning of my career in a good position. And that just is not the way to galvanize a team. Like, I don't know what to do, because the team is in a point of transition where older guys, even like John Jones, they're not playing like the most impactful positions on the field. And you want to be able to turn it over to the younger guys, but they really don't know what they're doing yet. And they don't know the way forward and the way to be professionals yet. And I say all of that with the exception of Drake May, because even though Drake May is not a rah-rah guy and he's not particularly vocal in that locker room right now, the older guys who I talk to, and older, I'm talking about like Mike and Wenu, you know, like 26, 27-year-olds, because it is a young locker room, they have so much respect for the way that he is day to day and just being a professional and just going about it and not pointing fingers at anybody else and just looking at himself in the mirror and trying to get better every day. Like, I say all of that to say, like, both in terms of the culture and the play and the talent level, Drake is really like what you have going for you. So thank God they drafted him, even though a lot of people were like, meh, they're not in a position to support a quarterback. Yeah, guess what? They're not. I'm still happy as hell that he's in the locker room.
Yeah, that's okay. You can't, like, we can't go back and we can't fix any of the mistakes they've made in this lost half decade that is in danger of becoming a fully lost decade, that is in danger of a team continuing to search for an identity. They thought they found a new one after they punted on 2020, or rather they should have punted on 2020, but they tried to compete in a COVID year. They thought they got lucky with Mac Jones and the uncharacteristically aggressive offseason and spending spree. They didn't. It became a mess, and now they're in danger of losing God knows how much more. So much is now contingent, or as Andy Hart likes to say, hinges on and contingent. He'll say hingent, his little radio portmanteau. So much is contingent on Drake May basically being the mantelpiece, the hood ornament, the savior of this franchise. The kid just wants to go out and play football. And no, he's not rah-rah. No, he's not a big, loud voice. No, he's not LFG and fist pump in the end zone. He is, however, extremely talented. And while it would have been better, maybe in the long run, to grab a quarterback, but also get another receiver and get a better tackle and get some more assets, that's what next offseason is going to have to be about. And this rest of the season is going to have to be about telling everyone to pipe down and just let Drake cook, and then everyone else figure out what their role is going forward. All right, let's go to the phones, Mego. We got lots of people lined up who want to talk some Patriots with us. First, we go to my dad's birth town, the great Dorchester. Rich is there right now, and he wants to talk Patriots with us. Good morning, Rich. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, folks there. I just had a couple things I wanted to say. I have no problem at all with Mayo coming out and challenging them and calling them soft, because I believe that he's already told them that behind closed doors. But what I think he should have said at the same time was that how he and the rest of the coaching staff are in the same boat. And for instance, I think in Sunday's game, when it came down to when the Patriots went for the 2-point conversion, mm-hmm. that was on Mayo. I think that was a terrible decision. It made no sense to me as to why they went for that at that point, because they had momentum behind them. The defense had just made a great stop. And so I think if Mayo had come out and said, yeah, we're all playing soft, I have no issues at all with that. But what do we expect from this team? You know, at the start of the season, we were talking maybe they'd win 3-4 games. They were in the game with Seattle. They could have beaten Miami. But they are what they are. And I think the rest of the season going forward is just trying to coach these players to be, to be a little bit better. But they're not going to win a lot this year. And I think people have to temper their expectations with this team.
Okay,
Rich,
Fitzy.
Appreciate the call, Rich. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it very much. 2 points. One is that there is a big difference between a 4-win team, which is what you were last year, of course, and a 1-win team.
Yeah, we forget that they were 2-9 at one point last year. They were very not good last year.
I know people want to say, like, oh, it's all about the draft position, and who cares if you win 4 games or 1 game. It makes a difference for the feeling in the locker room and the feeling with the coaching staff. Mm-hmm. The other thing I'd say is if they were losing these games like they were losing the Seattle game, it would feel really different down there, because I think that there would be a lot fewer problems that you'd feel like you had to solve week to week, but they're not. They're losing in manners that are completely uncompetitive when you look at the last 2 weeks. Completely uncompetitive out of those games. And I think that's where the team starts to look at each other and starts to spin out of control. And it feels like we don't even know where to start in the problem solving, because there are so many problems and there are new ones that spring up every week. So I think that that's the difference. It's not just about losing week to week. It's how poorly you're losing and how uncompetitive you look.
Yeah, and to me, the biggest indictment of how this team seemed to know who they were and how they were going to go about their business this year, and then they lost it, and they seem to have not been able to pull up out of this spiral since, and that's what we want to see them try to do both tomorrow and the rest of the season for the benefit of the culture, for the benefit of the coach, for the benefit of these players, some of which may not even be with the team after November 5th, and most especially Drake May, who, whether you wanted them to take a QB third overall or not, is the centerpiece of attraction and hopefully the culture going forward. They started the season off with a hard-ass win. That's exactly what it was. They went out there. It was the take them to the hill game. They out-toughed. They were more physical. They played a great game. And, of course, Jabril Peppers and Juwan Bentley, two centerpieces of that defense that held the Bengals to only 10 points the first week, are gone since then. But I would think people would want to pick up that flag and run with it. And I would think that people would want to try to maintain that identity. And to go from take them to the hill to getting run on 17 times, to go from a hard-ass football team to a soft-ass football team in just a month and a half, hate to say it, but, you know, maybe Gerard Mayo did need to call himself out as well.
Got a 204 texter echoing that, saying Mayo has the presence of a substitute teacher.
Oh, man, that's... I don't even know where the 204 is, but that is shots fired early
on
Saturday morning.
Shout out substitute teachers. I think that's a tough job.
It is. Although most, you know, my kids always love when the subs come in.
Right, because you can take advantage of them.
Well, that's a different perspective, Fitzy.
Exactly. I know. No, I hear that as well. And it's, you know, you want to say it's reflective on the, you want to say we're a soft football team? It starts with you, coach. And that's maybe why Mayo did a little bit of a pivot in his pressers. He was referred to in the media, that's when it's not busy attacking itself locally, said he was more Belichickian in his posture, demeanor, and comments this week. Maybe that's to the team's benefit. We'll see. Frank, Dan, Rick, don't you guys go anywhere. We'll get to you when we get back for the next hour of Fitzy and Mego, 617-779-7937. Happy to have you on a Saturday morning here on WEEI.